Twins and the Royals. Chance to make up more ground on the AL Central leaders. Tigers fall today. More coming up here from the Dome in a moment on KSTP.
From ABC News, I'm Gil Gross. A House hearing on the friendly fire death of Army Ranger and one-time NFL player Pat Tillman. Former Pentagon brass saying, though the nation and Tillman's family were led to believe for more than a month Tillman was killed by the enemy in Afghanistan, he was even given a Silver Star, there was no attempt to cover up the fact it was actually friendly fire. And that led to this exchange between Democratic presidential candidate Dennis Kucinich and former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld.
You actually covered up the Tillman case for a while. You covered up the Jessica Lynch case. You covered up Abu Ghraib. So something was working for you. Was there a strategy to do it, Mr. Rumsfeld?
Well, Congressman, the implication that you said you covered up, that's just false. You have nothing to base that on. You have not a scrap of evidence or a piece of paper or a witness that would attest to that.
But though this hearing was a who knew it, there didn't seem to be any interest in making it a whodunit. No questions about evidence Tillman was shot at close range or why his body armor and uniform were burned and buried. Now, within the hour, we also had a verdict from a military jury at Camp Pendleton in the murder of an innocent civilian in Iraq. ABC's Alex Stone with that here in Los Angeles.
Corporal Marshall Magan Calda was one of seven Marines who killed an Iraqi grandfather and then tried to cover it up by planting evidence on the man. The corporal was found guilty of conspiracy but was acquitted on charges of premeditated murder and kidnapping. He stood rigid as the verdict was being read. Families in the courtroom let out loud sighs.
And from the White House, as expected, it has been asserted executive privilege applies to keep advisor Karl Rove and political aide J. Scott Jennings from testifying about the firing of federal prosecutors. House Judiciary Committee has already approved contempt citations for two other officials for which the claim was made. The full House is expected to back those citations, but Justice Department has already said it will refuse to prosecute them. Wall Street, good day. Dow up 150 points today, and the NASDAQ was up by 8 points. You're listening to ABC News.
Everyone's racing to participating Ford and Lincoln Mercury dealerships during Pit Stop Savings Day. Right now, make a pit stop to buy four Michelin or BF Goodrich tires, and you'll get a $50 gas card on us. Get our team of experts on your side. Hurry into your participating Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership. Pit Stop Savings Days end soon. Call 1-877-310-3673 for details, or see participating dealer before 9:30 07.
I just peeked in your medicine cabinet.
Excuse me?
Yeah. Wow.
I can explain.
How do you explain all those different pain relievers?
Oh, that. Well, I have one for headaches. I got another one when I hurt my back and...
Stop. It's time to go all Advil. Advil is the every pain reliever.
Isn't there
something that's stronger or lasts longer? No.
So it'll work when my legs are sore from chasing down snoopers.
I suppose. Shouldn't you be all Advil?
Compared to OTC pain relievers, use as directed.
Mostly sunny, 91 in Minneapolis, St. Paul. For AM 1500 KSTP News, I'm Nancy Fox. A Burnsville man who made $24 million selling prescription painkillers through his internet pharmacy was sentenced to 30 years in federal prison today. 27-year-old Christopher Smith was convicted by a federal jury in Minneapolis in November on 9 counts, including conspiracy to sell drugs illegally, misbranding drugs, and money laundering. Smith's attorney says he will appeal. Part of Highway 169 near Onamia is closed at this hour following a semi-car accident earlier this afternoon. The State Patrol says a semi burst into flames after hitting a car just south of Lake Mille Lacs. The semi was carrying a load of tires. Both drivers survived the crash. Southbound lanes of 169 remain closed while the scene is cleaned up. First, they called it suicide. Now the death of a Minnesota priest in Africa is considered murder. Father John Kaiser was found dead by the side of a busy highway in 2000 in the African country of Kenya. A Kenyan court now calls his death a murder, not a suicide, as a previous investigation determined. Kaiser, a native of Purim, lived in Kenya for 35 years and openly criticized the government. And they help Northwest emerge from bankruptcy. Now the airline's attorneys want a raise. The lead lawyers are asking for a $3.5 million bonus for their work. The law firm calls the bonus a free enhancement, claiming they deserve it for helping unsecured creditors get more money back. legal experts say such fees are approved 99% of the time. Five Eyewitness Weather from Dave Dahl. Scattered thunderstorms possible tonight, 67. Sunny tomorrow, but less humid, and 87. It's 91 at the Talk Station, AM 1500 KSTP.
Thomas Show on AM 1500, your proud home of Minnesota Twins baseball. Twins trying to go to five in a row, and they'll hope Boof Bonser can help the cause. 5-7 on the air, 4.72 ERA. He'll be opposed by Kansas City right-hander Brian Bannister, son of Floyd. 7-6 on the air, 3.42 ERA. The action 1 hour away right here on AM 1500. 651-646-TALK is how you reach this program. 651-646-8255, 877-615-1500. If you're just joining us, first of all, hello. It's number two. My name is Matt. Nick is the producer. We are here every night between 5:30 until 8. The Twins stop us. We end the program at 6:40. Hope that you're a part of this program on good days and bad. Controversial topics or just good days to talk sports and life in general. And today we obviously are talking a lot about the Joe Christensen column in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, which I thought was very interesting and said a lot of things about how the most important player perhaps this franchise has had in quite some time feels about the direction of the team. And while I agree with a lot of the things he said in terms of, you know, is this franchise, how aggressive were they? Are they going to make the moves to make big dollar decisions and get big players in here? Ultimately, what good does it do for him to come out and talk about how what didn't happen over the last 48 hours is going to obviously impact his future with his Twins organization? Let's face it, the bottom line is if Johan Santana gets the best deal or gets a deal comparable, I don't know if he'll stay here or not. That's only going to be determined through his agent and himself. But everything along the lines he's told us for the last couple of years is he wants to stay here. So, relatively speaking, if he gets a competitive offer, he would be a part of this team for the long term. Now, if he doesn't get a competitive offer, the offer is dramatically lower than other teams are offering, then you know what? A lot of people will say Johan's gone 2 years ago. We're going to be right. My only point is, again, what ultimate good came out of this? A lot of you that have called me so far in the first half hour of the show said it was a wake-up call. It was a wake-up call to the Pollads. It was a wake-up call to Terry Ryan. And just take a step back on this for a second. And here's where, I've given out criticism on this baseball team for many reasons. We've talked about the inadequacies of this lineup for a better part of the entire season. We joked and teased and ultimately criticized the decision to bring Sidney Ponson in here and the fact that Ramon Ortiz was not going to be a fix. But do any of you within the sound of my voice that are upset about the team not making any moves really believe that Terry Ryan was handcuffed and did not want to do anything to better this baseball team? Just answer that question. And if you still think that they were just going to sit there and watch, you know, this team stand pat without realistically trying to make something happen, then I guess then Johan's criticism is fair, and you can feel like that what he said really is going to strike a nerve. But Terry Ryan's been in the business a long time. I tend to trust his decisions. And the fact of the matter is, if you wanted to give up Pat Neshek, you want to give up Matt Garza, or you want to give up Kevin Slowey, you could have gotten yourself a mid-range hitter. But if you didn't want to give those guys up, you can't sell Nick Punto and Lou Ford and Jason Tyner and others similar players to get a guy in here that's going to add a tremendous pop to your lineup. Would I have liked them to make a move? Absolutely. Luis Castillo move? Could this team have survived by keeping him here? Absolutely. But as we speak right now, this team is on a four-game winning streak. And as I said 2 days ago when this trade went down, no matter if Luis Castillo is in this lineup or not, it comes down to starting pitching, and it comes down to the guys in the heart of the order driving the piranhas in. And so it's up to the piranhas to get on base. It is up to Morneau and Maurer and Hunter to do what they've been doing most of the season, and that is driving runs in and keeping this team busy on the base pass. And ultimately, when it comes to starting pitching, you've seen Scott Baker do a nice job the last couple of nights. Carlos Silva was terrific last night. Johan is Johan. And if Matt Garza continues to grow, this team will make up ground. And I think they can do it without having Luis Castillo as their everyday second baseman. Let's go to some more of your phone calls. My conversation with Torrey Hunter from yesterday I want to get to. Just let you guys hear what he had to say. Now, again, this was before the victory over Kansas City. Nothing a whole lot changed, but at least to give you perspective of what it's like to watch teammates go and names being bandied around in terms of whether or not they're going to be traded. I'll get to that conversation shortly. But right now, let's go to some phone calls. Jim in Brooklyn Park at 10 minutes past 6. You're on the Matt Thomas Show. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Matt. How you doing?
Good. Thank you for calling.
No problem. Say, as far as Johan goes, can I echo something that you said before? I'm going to take the flip side here that the other callers I've heard. I'm agreeing with you, I think, almost 100% on this. I am so sick of athletes that think they have a mandate to be general manager. I don't like it. And the biggest reason for that is, as a fan, it's loser talk to me. I'm hearing ready-made excuses for why we're going to lose or why we can't win or why we can't do this, why we can't do that. And I don't really want that. As a fan, I want to be inspired. I want to see inspirational things and hear inspirational things from the teams that I'm watching. I don't want to hear a bunch of excuses. I can't stand it.
What I would have liked to have heard, and this is what you'll hear from Torrey coming up, is, you know what? This team was great. Would love to have added an extra bat, an extra arm. I'm going to miss Luis Castillo. He was a good friend. But guess what? I'm the ace of this roster. I'm a guy that's won with 3 Cy Youngs in the last 4 years. I'm going to take the ball every fifth day, and I'm going to do everything within my human power to win this baseball team another division championship.
Yep. That's his job. Get on the mound and throw the ball past people.
And to be honest with you, I don't even want to talk. Since the Twins don't talk about it, since Johan doesn't talk about it, I don't want to hear about the future right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. And that's just the fact of the matter. Again, what Johan said, absolutely true. Could this team have used some extra players? Yes. At what price, we don't know. But
yep.
I'd rather him said, all right, it's you and me against the world, as compared to saying, I don't know if I want to be a part of this, because all we do is see this franchise do the same thing year after year after year.
Yep. Give me like Kirby said, you know, in 91, get on my back. That's the kind of stuff. That's what players are supposed to say. Not you know, trying to play general manager. They got jobs to do. It's on the field. That's where it should end. Just get it done on the field, and for the rest of it, shut up.
Thanks, Jim, for the phone call. Appreciate you listening. Let's get to Mark in Hamlin at 611 on AM 1500. Hi, Mark.
Good day.
How are things?
A couple weeks ago, I was telling everybody, hey, why don't we bail Johan? Because he's the only one we can get a number of bats for.
Can you speak up? I can barely hear you, Mark.
Yeah. I was wondering why we didn't bail Johan a long time ago. 3 weeks ago, I was talking before the deadline. Get some major bats in here and get rid of somebody while he's worth something.
No, I wouldn't have done that. I mean, I want Johan wearing the Twins gear to the very last day. And in fact, I would like him to wear the Twins gear beyond 2008. I'm not. Luis Castillo was a part of your puzzle. You could. And again, it's all up for debate. My philosophy is he was a disposable part. Not that you'd want to. But you cannot get rid of your ace, and when you're trying to compete and at least think that you're a team of a caliber to make a division championship. There's no way.
With the amount of games we've been losing because of no hits, and I hear nobody's complaining about our pitching as a whole, and now we got somebody who's worth something. We could have got an awful lot of bats in here, I think, for getting rid of one big-name player.
Okay. Of the names brought out there, of the people that were traded, it would have included the only team that had anybody of A-list bats would have been Mark Teixeira. And Mark Teixeira's had a down year, and where are you going to put him? He's going to be your DH. You're going to tell me you're going to trade Mark Teixeira and whatever else for Johan Santana? That's crazy.
You don't think some names would have came up on the table if somebody started wanting to bail Johan?
No. If this organization decided that they wanted to trade Johan Santana, you would have heard of every A-list minor league product available. You would have heard of zero frontline guys.
What do you think if Johan opened his mouth now, and what about putting him behind the plate some more?
Behind bat? What?
Make him bat a little bit.
All right. Thanks for the phone call.
Good day.
See you later. Now it's just getting silly. Look, I am not endorsing Johan Santana. I mean, I don't care if he leaves in 2008 or not. He needs to pitch this year and all of next year, because he's just that damn good. And I just happen to disagree with this thought on this. I don't think this was the appropriate time. I really don't. Now if he leaves in a couple of years and says, if we say, Johan, why did you leave? Then you can bring this out. I just don't know what good it is. And again, some of you in the early portion of the show said, this is a wake-up call. Wake-up call. We've all been talking about this. Terry Ryan's not an idiot. The Polans understand the pressure that comes with owning a baseball team. But this is nothing new to them. Just, again, take this for a second in our small, real-world life. You go to your boss and you tell all your friends about how bad your job is and other working conditions and how you don't get paid. They come to find out about it. You're probably not going to be there much longer. Johan's very lucky that baseball is not real world. Buck and Blaine, 614 and AM 1500. Hi, Buck.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
My pleasure.
I called to say that I believe they're going to be as strong as ever defensively at second base and possibly stronger because we have a pair of young legs there now and a little more speed. We're going to have a real exciting player to watch. We didn't have to give up the world to get him because of the cleverness of our organization. Had that player ready to step in just such a situation. It's happened time after time with the Twins. I've been following them since they came here, and I followed them before when they were Washington Senators. And I think we were privileged to watch some pretty fine baseball here compared to what they were in Washington.
Yeah.
I don't think we'd want to return to that.
Nope.
I just want to say that I think they've probably improved the team in the long haul, and by the long haul, I mean the rest of the season.
Okay, Buck, thank you for the phone call. Let me get you guys to hear what Torrey Hunter and I talked about yesterday. Got in the clubhouse about 3:30 prior to, just after the deadline, of the trade deadline. I wanted to play yesterday, but with all the things going on with Kevin Garnett and our guests and whatnot, and I wanted just to hear it. And again, this is yesterday before the second game of the series, or the opening game of the series. And just going to let you get your thoughts about what's going on in the clubhouse and how Torrey presented what's going on for the rest of this year.
Is this the worst time of the year for major league athletes in general? Knowing whether you got players coming or going, you're coming or going, and just sense of relief right now.
For certain players, yeah, definitely. This is like the worst time, the worst week or two. You know, you don't know what's going to happen, you know, 2 weeks before the deadline. And this has been the worst for me. You know, last year, you know, I didn't think nothing was going to happen, but this year I really thought something was going to happen. And with me personally, but other than that, I thought maybe, you know, we'd have a chance to pick up a big hitter or whatever. And now we just got rid of Luis Castillo, and, you know, one of the guys at the top of our lineup who's always on base. Now he's gone. We don't have anybody in return. So right now, all we can do is just grind it out. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to go out there and keep fighting. And we don't know if we have much, but it's going to be interesting, you know, in the next couple of weeks to see what happens.
So when you find out Louis got sent to the bench, you were hoping this was just part one of a two-part situation.
Right. You know, that's what we're all hoping that, and we're all just thinking, like, you know, they got rid of Castillo to kind of, you know, balance out the budget a little bit and go pick up somebody, and it never worked. You know, it never happened, and so we just have to see what happened. I don't know if this is a white flag or not, but definitely a lot of players on this team, we're not thinking that it's a white flag. We're going to go out there and keep balling, keep grinding.
Can you guys use this as a rallying point, saying, all right, it's just us now. You can scoreboard watch all you want to, but if this team's going to make up the ground, you got to win the ball games, and not worry about Detroit and Cleveland.
That's right. You can't. You just got to go out there and worry about the task at hand, and that's what we're going to do. You know, it's normal. It's human that, you know, after the games that we win, we see what Detroit and Cleveland's going to do. We can say that all day and be politically correct, you know, but at the same time, after the game that we win, after the game that we lose, we're going to go see what Detroit and Cleveland's doing. It's just normal what we're going to do. So hopefully, you know, we go out there and worry about the task at hand. Don't worry about those guys too much while we're playing those games. But at the same time, just keep growling, keep balling, keep grinding.
Last question. Obviously, you're disappointed there wasn't something done here. At any point in your mind over the last week, did you think about the fact you may have to come back like Louis did and clean the locker out and go somewhere else? I mean, did that ever go through your mind?
I mean, just when you hear about it so much, I'm human. I'm just like, I always say that, man. I'm just like everybody else. When I hear something, you know, I can say, I don't want to worry about it. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
I can say that all day. That's politically correct. But at the same time, I'm thinking about it at home. Like, man, could this be my last, you know, 2 weeks with the Twins? So you start thinking about that, and it kind of drains you mentally and physically. And I hate that. But now it's over with. Now my energy is coming back.
That's Torrey. That's, you know, And again, yeah, obviously Tory's going to be disappointed about a lot of things and whatnot, but that conversation to me speaks more to what I was wanting Johan to say as compared to saying I'm worried about my future and whether or not I'm going to be here. That's my take on that. I'd rather heard more of that from Johan as to, you know what, we didn't make any moves. Am I upset and disappointed? Absolutely. But you know what? I'm a freaking Cy Young candidate every year. Guess what? This is only going to inspire me to help this team out more. Oh, by the way, we already told you Oakland is lost at Detroit 3-2. Texas has scored 3 in the top of the first against the Indians in Cleveland. Shades of last year again? I mean, are you kidding me? We'll talk more about that shortly. It's 6:20. It's the Matt Thomas Show. We're live at the ballpark. DQ Talk Box. Twins v. Royals. 651-646-8255 is how you reach this program. 651-646-TALK. 877-615-1500. Come on back with us. Matt Thomas Show. We're live at the ballpark on AM 1500 KSTP.
I'll never again ask you to pull my finger.
I will never watch another episode of The Three Stooges.
I will always remember our anniversary, and this time I mean it.
You'd be surprised what some guys will do to be able to play a round of golf.
I will go to every chick flick you want to, and I'll like it.
Good thing they don't have to sacrifice to get the best golf advice. Available weekday afternoons at 5:10 from Jock Olson.
I will start asking you if what I'm wearing is okay.
They're quick, they're free, and you won't have to jump through any hoops to get them. Jock Olson's Golf Tips, brought to you each weekday by Federated Insurance.
The greatest moments in Twins history. Kirby Puckett's Game 6 home run.
And we'll see you tomorrow night.
The final World Series out in 87.
Bounce the ball, a guy, he has it. Close to Herbach, and the Twins are baseball's world champions.
Harmon Killebrew's 500th home run.
Going, going, number 500 for Harmon Killebrew.
Thursday, August 2nd, one of the biggest of them all.
I know it doesn't sound like much, but trust me, this will be groundbreaking.
August 2nd, bring the whole family to 3rd Avenue and 5th Street behind Target Center for the Twins' new ballpark groundbreaking ceremony.
Get free autographs from former Twins players, plus appearances by Joe Mauer and Justin Morneau.
A concert by Martin Zeller. Dollar hot dogs, burgers, chicken sandwiches, and soft drinks. Fireworks, plus the chance to be a part of history. The Twins' new ballpark groundbreaking ceremony, Thursday, August 2nd. For complete event details, visit twinsbaseball.com. That's twinsbaseball.com.
1 month you're making your mortgage payment with no problem. The next month, your rate jumps so drastically, you have to decide what to cut out just so you don't lose your home. I'm Deanna Doherty, president of American Equity Mortgage, and if you feel stuck in a mortgage you suddenly can't afford, listen carefully to this message. We've spent the last 15 years helping people in situations like yours find financial relief, and we can help you immediately.
Find financial relief now. Call 952-838-9900. That's 952-838-9900.
One of our experienced loan officers will talk to you right now and show you how your mortgage payment can be manageable again so you can return to enjoying your life.
Call 952-838-9900 or visit AmericanEquity.com. Celebrating 15 years in business by granting 15 wishes with the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Housing lender. Additional restrictions apply. FHA approved lender.
There are some offers you've got to take advantage of. Grandma taking the kids for the weekend, 10-year car warranties, a Vikings playoff ticket, because let's face it, they're usually run out by October.
See you later.
I'm Joe Souchere, offering you another deal you have to snatch up on AM 1500's dining deals. Every Wednesday, I'll announce when the offer is available during the 3 o'clock hour of GL. $50 gift certificates for half price. And with the money you save on the food, you can buy a couple of drinks and the cab ride home at the end of the night.
So simple, any business committee or boss will approve it. It's 25-cent color copies, flyers, newsletters, brochures, stationery, business cards, and posters starting at 25 cents each. Why pay more at the big chain? We're fast, easy, and affordable. All done on new equipment using the latest technology. We offer collating, folding, binding, booklet making, and trimming, and most jobs run in 24 hours or less with no rush charges. Just a minimum order of 100. Go to 25centcolorcopies.com. That's 25centcolorcopies.com.
Hey, it's the Rook here for Newgate Education Center in Minneapolis. For over 25 years, they've provided some pretty darn good services to people from all walks of life. The Wheels program provides single parents desperately needed transportation for free. They also have the tuition-free certified auto training. Boy, that'll give a student a big-time boost as well. They rely on your donations, though. Who donates? I don't know, maybe you just received some really bad news from your mechanic on your late model vehicle. You're faced with an expensive repair. You don't want the hassle. Don't let someone just take it off your hands for next to nothing. Donate it to Newgate Education Center. Hey, your deduction might be worth more than you think. Late model vehicles with engine, transmission, or collision damage provide great training opportunities for their students. Vehicles used for training qualify for the best write-off available, fair market value. Call Newgate for details, 612-378-0177, 612-378-0177, or online at newgateschool.org. Tell them Rook sent you.
Nothing makes a woman light up like getting a great look around a diamond. Just so happens to have the same effect on a man, especially when you're talking about going around the diamond. A nightly update on the Matt Thomas Show about what's happening in baseball. Around the Diamond, sponsored by R.F. Moeller Jeweler.
The Talk Station, AM 1500 KSTP.
We've got some breaking news, non-sports related. We're going to get to you in a couple of moments. Nancy Fox has some details on a bridge collapse that will obviously give you an update here shortly. But right now, let's get to Around the Diamond, brought to you by R.F. Moeller Jewelers. Twinks and Royals tonight on the hill for the local nine will be Boof Bonser at 5 and 7, opposite Brian Bannister at 7 and 6. Our coverage begins with the pregame show at the bottom of the hour right here on AM 1500. As we speak, the Detroit Tigers own a 5.5-game lead over the Minnesota Twins. That's because our good friends, the Oakland A's, knocked off the Tigers today 3-2. Mark Ellis with a home run in the win. Again, the A's beat the Tigers 3-2. Speaking of Cleveland, they're the wild card leader. They're already down 3-0 to Texas with play in the bottom half of the first inning. The Indians lead the Mariners by 1.5 in the wild card, 3 over the Yankees, and 5 over the Twins. Seattle tonight is home for Los Angeles of the Angels of Anaheim. The Yankees are at Chicago to take on the White Sox. Today here at the ballpark, speaking of Kansas City, Buddy Bell decided he's going to call it quits after this season and says family priorities are more important right now.
I've decided not to return as the Kansas City Royals manager next year. Mainly for personal reasons. Quite frankly, last year when I got sick, my priorities changed. A lot of things have happened to me personally since I've been manager of the Royals.
One other baseball note, Barry Bonds in action tonight, still at 744 on the all-time home run chart. He was 1-for-2 with 2 base on balls last night. Giants at the Dodgers this evening. That is our Around the Diamond update brought to you by R.F. Moeller Jewelers. 626 on AM 1500, and again, as soon as Nancy is ready to give us some sort of update, as a matter of fact, we may even want to go to Channel 5 on air if they've got something for us, Nick. We may want to go with a plan B. What I'm hearing from our listeners in front of us here, there has been a bridge collapse. The University Bridge is what I've been told, 94 and 35W. And, you know, when situations like this happen, first of all, we want to give the news folks an opportunity to broadcast that, and it kind of pales in comparison of what's going on here in the toy shop of the world of sports. So, obviously, a very unsettling situation, and we'll try to get you an update and maybe even jump into Channel 5 before we get you to the Twins here shortly. Let me get to a couple of phone calls before we get to the news update. Al is with us next on AM 1500 at 627. Hi, Al.
Hello. Wondering if Johan isn't showing a little bit of frustration of a season that isn't up standards, what he normally does. And as I think about that, I'm kind of thinking about he should concentrate on his performance and working a little harder. I think he's given up a ton of home runs this year. And
yeah, he had 4 against Blue Jays last week. I mean, he's been good. He has just not been, you know, his typical Cy Young-esque type form. ERA still under 3. If I had to start a baseball game 7 with a game on the line, he's still my guy.
Well, and me too, but at the same time, you know, I kind of get the impression he's indicating that he's not getting the support behind him, and maybe he's not, but, you know, if we cut the home run total in half, I wonder how many more games he would have won.
Yeah, he's clearly frustrated. The bats have not helped him out. Thank you, Al, for the phone call. Let me run to Dave in Minneapolis next in 628. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Quick analogy here that I'm interested in your comments on.
Okay.
I work for a company locally out of St. Paul here that started out as a small mom-and-pop and has grown to international, 20,000 employees. And I'm a field guy, always have been. And you know, there's times when new policies, procedures, whatever, come out that you don't necessarily agree with, but you toe the company line and you execute the directions from upper management, and there's some smart people up there. But I can think of a very small handful of times in my career that opposition has come from the sales force.
All right, we're going to, thank you, Dave. I hate to interrupt you. We're going to live Channel 5 coverage to help us out here and what exactly what's going on over at 94 in the Washington, the University Avenue Bridge.
And we'll ask questions.
Thanks, John. I was chirped that a little after hours, the W35W River Bridge collapsed a little after 6 p.m. just north of Washington Avenue and just south of the ramp to 4th Street and University Avenue. We've got MnDOT First, MnDOT Maintenance, and State Patrol en route closing access to the freeway naturally through the Commons at 94 and as far away as 36 and 35W up in Roseville. That's what I know for sure right now, just checking cameras from the operations center.
Okay, Todd, and once again, you got the emergency call a little bit after 6, that this occurred a little bit after 6.
That's what we understand. It occurred right a little bit after 6 o'clock.
Do you have an estimate on traffic flow at that time?
Well, we do know that typically on a normal Wednesday, the PM peak, if you will, is starting to wrap up. Volumes are significantly less at that time than they are, you know, earlier in the peak, say 4:30, 5 o'clock.
I don't know where you are, what you're looking at from your vantage point right now, but of course from our scene on Chopper 5, we are seeing a bridge that looks like it has heaved in several places at both ends.
Right.
And that would mean that there would be traffic that would be affected both on the bridge and at the ends of the bridge. Is that what you know as well?
I would imagine so. What I'm looking at is one of our traffic management cameras in Washington and 35W looking north toward the collapsed area.
And that is still functioning. You can see that.
I can see on that camera, yes. So what I see is smoke rising from the collapse area. I can see the other side of the river, or the north, or what, east bank of the river, if you will.
All right, Todd, if you could stay with us just for a second. What we're looking at right now, it appears to be passersby who are trying to help people out of this collapsed bridge. And we're seeing passersby in street clothes. I'm assuming they're people who just are trying to pitch in, who are moving people out of this scene on some kind of backboards onto some kind of gurneys. We're getting wider shots now of this bridge collapse, and it is dramatic is an understatement. Catastrophic is more the word. Take a look at this. One of the main iconic bridges in the Twin Cities has collapsed. Cars in the water. We saw school buses. We saw a truck that's on fire. Another rescue worker just on the right side of your screen with a backboard looking to do whatever he can do. There's now a rescue in the water, it appears. It looks like there's a rescue going on in the water as people look on and what's left, the chunks of the bridge that have fallen into the Mississippi River.
Now, Ken has our chopper pilot, Ken Melchior, has an excellent literal bird's eye view of what is going on here. Can you add a little bit more to what we're seeing, Ken?
Yes, I can. I think the initial estimate of 20 cars involved in this is going to be light. I think there's more than that. When we take the total count from the point the bridge collapsed on the south side to where cars were able to stop in time on the north side, the center section of the bridge is down in the water. It appears as though rescue crews have made it down in that area, trying to figure out a way to get the people off of it. Cars are in the water. A rescue boat has arrived on the scene right now, and the fire that is still burning on the south side, I don't even think they're going to try to tackle that right now. Everybody seems to have gotten out of the way. There was a school bus involved right nearby. People have been able to be evacuated from that. I take that back. Fire engines have now arrived on the scene, and looks like they're getting set up to work on that fire that's on the south side. Back to you.
Ken, that looked like it was the cab of a semi-truck that got trapped under two pieces of the bridge that collapsed. Is that what it looks like to you, too?
Well, if you take a close look at it, that is the southbound side of the highway. And what likely happened is the bridge collapsed, and the truck simply just drove right off that section into the abutment and then caught fire.
Would you estimate that was the fate of the other cars that we see in the water, that they were simply caught at that point of upheaval and ended up in the water?
Yes, I think that's this. From the picture that I'm seeing up above, where I can look at the whole thing from end to end at one time, it appears that this bridge just simply came down in one shot. From north to south.
All right, Ken. Folks, we're looking at a surreal scene right now. Just to bring you up to date, this is the 35W bridge over the Mississippi River, it has collapsed. By our crew's estimates, 20-plus vehicles, it might be many more than 20, are involved in this catastrophe. The fire you see burning is apparently the cab of a semi burning, a school bus right next to it. We don't know if anyone was on that school bus. We're seeing cars in the water. We're seeing cars underneath the sections of the bridge that collapsed. We are seeing dramatic rescue efforts by people in street clothes who appear to be passersby who are doing what they can. We have apparently fire rescue crews in the water trying to get the victims who may be in the water. Again, the 35W bridge over the Mississippi River collapsed at the end of rush hour, just after 6 o'clock tonight.
We're looking at the scene between Washington and University, and we're going to go to reporter Steve Shaw. Steve?
John and Cindy, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to tell you that just maybe as many as 50 cars. I'm on the 10th Street Bridge. I'm looking down on this stuff. Police have let my photographer and myself stay on the bridge with them. And I'm telling you right now, there's at least 30 cars, maybe as many as 50. And I'm looking at that semi-tractor trailer you're talking about, and that fire has increased dramatically since I set foot on this bridge. I'm sure the fire department is addressing that right now. The school bus is fully intact. I'm sure they got kids off. If there were kids on that bus, maybe there weren't kids on the bus. Hopefully not. But I'm telling you, folks, there's more than 20 cars here. And I'm telling you, the police are shocked as anybody. They're doing the best they can in keeping people back. But it's quite the scene.
Steve, how many rescue vehicles do you think are being headed to that area that you can see at this point?
There's at least 10 tankers here already.
And we've got another fire burning on the other side of the bridge now, Steve. We can see it now. We've got a pickup truck. Looks like it's on fire.
And John, they just put out the fire. They're right now throwing water and whatever they got to put on anti-accelerant on that semi-tractor trailer we were just talking about.
Brave firefighter on that bridge right now, looking into those vehicles, and you really get a feel for what these men and women do. Disturbing does not begin to describe this scene that we're seeing in downtown Minneapolis. Now you can see smoke coming out from the back end of that semi-truck. Allison Triarcy, one of the first reporters for us on the scene. Allison, what can you tell us?
John, right now I'm with Cole Maymark, who's been able to use this small mini camera to actually zoom in on that school bus. We do see that the back door of that school bus is open. Behind that school bus, there are two people standing up very close to those flames. Basically, they don't have any place to go. The fire is expanding, like you mentioned. I do see, definitely from my vantage point now, more than 20 cars that are involved in this. If you hear the noise behind me, that's the fire department. They are moving into the area trying to do what they can. A lot of people are scattering. Firefighters are running towards that bridge. More and more crews continue to show up here.
Allison, have you seen any people that appeared to be scurrying and hopefully making it to safety?
Tell me that again, Cindy.
I was wondering if you had seen any people who were trying to run to safety and we hope made it to safety.
It's just too hard to hear you right now, Cindy.
Okay.
We've got the fire trucks moving in and out. Try it one more time.
Well, we were just wondering how many people were managing to make it to safety. We see the cars. We see rescue crews. We see some individuals looking absolutely stunned, as you might guess. And we were wondering if you had any other information on that, on people making it out.
Yes, great question, Cindy. I can hear you now. A lot of the cars that I see are, in fact, empty. So that's the good news here. I've seen one person taken out on the stretcher only, other people walking out. I do see some people on that bridge right now where the flames are. We've got a lot of people, of course, gathering all around. There are several hundred people that are standing on and near this bridge at the very base of it, of course, where it is safe, where police are allowing us to stand. They do have water on that fire at this point, but again, not a lot of people that I can see at all right now. All of the cars I can see are empty.
Okay, now from Chopper 5, we see a live picture of crews on the water right now looking for people who might be in the water, might be underneath a crumpled car to the left of that rescue boat that we saw. While Allison was reporting to us, we saw emergency crews on the bridge working on an apparent victim. We've seen this picture here of two people sitting on the pavement. There isn't two more sitting, perhaps by their car, perhaps counting their blessings right now. Hopefully they've been able to get a hold of family at home to tell them that they're okay. Imagine the number of vehicles that crossed over that bridge in the minutes and the seconds leading up to this disaster. Mark Albert is on the scene for us now as we continue our coverage of this disaster on 35W. Mark?
John, I am with hundreds of people as they are walking to the scene of this bridge collapse. They are walking to the bank of the river. Hundreds and hundreds of people crossing the streets, flooding out here, coming here. They've got their cell phones out. They are talking to people. And so many people have an expression of shock on their face as they are looking at the dark plume of smoke rising. You can hear the sirens behind me as more emergency crews try to arrive here at the scene. But really, an incredible situation here. You're looking at that video. You're looking at those pictures. And there are hundreds, if not thousands of people streaming toward the area here who cannot believe what they're seeing.
Yeah, what we're looking at, of course, is the bridge that appears to have collapsed on both sides, north and south, heaved in the middle, and then sending the cars along with at those rupture points. And more than one rupture point, it appears.
Let's get back to the newsroom quickly. Leah McLean is going to join our coverage right now with some information. Leah?
John, back here in the newsroom, we're trying to dig up some information about inspections that have been going on 35W, about any construction going on in the area. As we're looking up information, I can tell you this bridge opened in 1967. It was back in 2004 that MnDOT shut down some lanes. They restricted the areas. They could do inspections. This was just 3 years ago in 2004 in the summer. They inspected both the north and the southbound lanes of this road. They try to maintain the safety out here. Right now, no construction in this specific area, although a lot of 35W has construction going on. But this is a relatively not that old of a bridge, 1967. And right now you can see exactly what we're looking at. No idea just yet on what could have caused this crash to happen, this bridge collapse. We are digging into that information right now. We have crews here in our newsroom working our sources as well as all the crews that you've heard out on the scene. But what we're watching is absolutely amazing to see. And everyone in here is trying to figure out what could have started all this.
There will be plenty of time for questions. Many questions that we will be asking of a lot of people, but right now we need to watch the rescue efforts going on. We need to hope for the best for these folks. There is a victim being carried by firefighters off of a collapsed section of bridge. That was the person we saw them working on a couple of minutes ago as Chopper 5 made a pass on the other side of the bridge. And you just really have to have to take a moment and hope for the best for these folks. The bridge erected in 1967, our reporter Steve Shaw estimating 50-plus vehicles either damaged in the water or on fire after this bridge collapsed.
This bridge collapsed shortly after 6 o'clock. We were on the phone earlier with a spokesman from MnDOT who said, for what this is worth, fortunately, this was toward the tail end of the rush hour, meaning perhaps fewer cars than normal than you might expect at that hour of the day at 6 o'clock. Happened between about 6 and 6:15. Once again, this is the bridge between Washington and University. It has collapsed both ends, sending cars and other sorts of vehicles into the river. We also have Chopper 5 up there, as you can see, giving us an excellent and horrifying view of what looks basically right now like matchsticks. Ken, it looks as if the bridge has possibly shredded. Is that what we're looking at?
Well, this type of superstructure, once a section of it gives way, it just creates weakness and buckling throughout the entire superstructure of the bridge. So if one section is weakened, it what essentially you've seen happen is it takes down everything, right to the bridge abutments that are on both sides of the river. And like you said, it's a bit of a surreal situation down here. We've seen two official water rescue boats now pull into the area, but also a kayaker has come in to try to offer some assistance as well right now. The fires that are on the south side are still burning, but they have spread to the north side. The northbound traffic, it looks like one to two cars have also caught fire. We just moments ago saw one of the gas tanks explode, but firefighters are on both sides of the bridge right now dousing that with water. We're going to continue to try to see how the rescue effort goes with getting those people that are on that center section out of the water, and I'll toss it back to you.
All right, thank you very much. Well, once again, 35W bridge collapse in Minneapolis over the Mississippi River happened between 6 and 6:15 during the tail end of rush hour traffic. We know that we are closed off between Washington and University. It appears that the bridge heaved at least on both ends and carrying the rest of the bridge with it. Multiple vehicles in the water. We have reporters on the scene who are telling us that they estimate between 30 and 50 cars in the water.
And as you think about the traffic that was on this bridge shortly after 6 o'clock during rush hour, the tail end of rush hour, we are reminded that there is so much going on in Minneapolis and St. Paul these summer nights. The Twins game at the Metrodome set to start a little bit after 7 o'clock. Perhaps some Twins games traffic on this bridge at the time. It looks like rescue crews are trying to get at this scene any way they possibly can. It again appears that the bridge collapsed in, I'm going to say, five or six large sections, including what you're looking at right now. A couple of the large sections in the water. You can see the green framing, the green girders, the iron work of the bridge. As Cindy described, it looks like matchsticks. And here again, maybe these are cars that were about to get on the bridge and it simply buckled and came right down at them, and they stopped short of the river.
Well, John, as you mentioned, this is a busy spot in the Twin Cities, and there were witnesses to this, and we have somebody on the phone, and I apologize, I don't have your name. We have him live at the scene. Can you tell us what you witnessed happen, please? Hi, Breanne Stately. Hello.
Yes.
Tell us what you saw, Brianne.
Well, we were on the 35W coming in from Duluth, and we were behind the blue minivan that you see on the road.
Uh-huh.
It's still hanging on the bridge. We just pulled off right before we heard a rumble, and just as we heard the rumble, then the bridge collapsed in, and we were then on the other bridge right next to it.
So you were behind the what could have been the last car that was clinging onto the edge of the bridge.
Yes, we were right behind them.
Did you heard a rumble? Did you feel anything?
Yes, you could feel it. It was just a rumble, and then you felt it when it caved in, and I watched it go into the V where the first V is. Coming towards downtown, and a school bus went in there.
Yeah, we see the school bus from our helicopter, Brianne. How far away from the actual point of collapse were you in your vehicle when it happened?
We were on the bridge that, the exit just getting off right there. We were crossing that bridge on University.
Okay, say that again. I'm sorry, I didn't hear how far you were.
We were crossing the bridge on University. We just got off right before.
Were you looking straight ahead, or did this rumble you described, did this rumble make you look ahead and see what happened? How full of view did you see of what happened?
Well, we saw from the back first. As we heard the rumble, we looked because we were on the freeway. I mean, off the freeway then onto the bridge. And we saw the cars fall in when we were on the bridge next to it, because we turned, took that left turn across University, and then the right turn onto the bridge by the on 10th Street. And so while they were collapsing, we were on the bridge adjacent to it.
Were you driving or was someone else driving?
My mom was, but she was so upset. She went home. She's shaking and crying. Well, she can't even move.
This is just horrible to look at, Brianne. And your mom was able to pull over or just stop in the middle of the road, or what did she do?
No, she kept driving because we had to. She was kind of just screaming, and between watching her and watching the cars fall in the road, I actually watched that blue minivan skid and slide sideways trying to stop.
And as far as you saw, that did manage to kind of cling on metaphorically by its fingernails, by its tires.
Yes, just barely. As a matter of fact, when I got back down here, I prayed all the way down here hoping that car made it. And that was the only thing for hope for me. My little brothers came down here with me, and he's just crying because of the kids.
Well, to you and a lot of other people praying right now, Brianne.
Yeah.
How fast were you going when this happened? How fast was the vehicle traveling?
Our vehicle?
Yeah.
We were going probably maybe at this point 10 miles an hour. My mom was pretty upset.
Now, how many vehicles were in front of you? I know you focused on the blue minivan, but how crowded was the roadway when this happened?
Oh, it was very crowded.
All right, I think we're looking
at... Because it was down to one lane.
This might be the blue minivan you're taking. Was it a dark blue minivan?
Dark blue minivan,
okay, there it is,
right by
there.
The porta potty.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. And there it is. And is your right by the porta potty there. And that vehicle looks like it did stop. It skidded sideways, as you described. I'd say, rough estimate, 20 feet away from a gap where the bridge simply gave way.
And I watched that happen.
We have Allison Triarcy. By the way, Brianne, thank you very much. And if you wouldn't mind standing by here for just a second, but we do have a report coming in from Allison Triarcy that we want to get to. Allison?
Okay.
I have spoken with University of Minnesota police. Obviously, this entrance and this ramp was right here in the middle of university properties. They confirmed to me that there are multiple injuries. When I asked them, could you confirm 20 to 30, she said I couldn't even begin to count the number of injuries we have right now. I asked her if she could confirm to me that, in fact, we have people who have died on this bridge. She could not confirm that at this point. I asked her what possibly could have contributed to this structure failure. She said, in fact, that it wasn't one thing that she has heard from the crew, not particularly one thing that they were doing, but that, in fact, it was an overall structural failure that led to this problem, and that is simply what she's heard from the crews that are all around here now trying to figure out exactly what happened.
And once again, we have aid coming in from every city and every county. Is that correct, in the state of Minnesota?
I have heard that they are calling in people from multiple cities and counties. Different sheriff's departments have already shown up. It's very hard, of course, to glean where they're coming in from. I just see them coming in from so many directions. We do have crews on that bridge right now in the class portion where it was burning. They've got that fire all but out. I'm sure you guys have probably seen that overhead. But a lot of retardant coming onto that portion of the bridge. A lot of white smoke now instead of the black smoke. And
right.
Certainly a lot of crews on that portion of the bridge trying to help those people.
All right. Okay, Allison.
Yeah.
I know you're going to stay with us and stay safe out there. But we do know that every county and city in this region, we're not sure if that means the Twin Cities Metro or beyond, is right now being asked to come in and help in this situation. We also know we have information now that the school bus had a youth program, kids who are in a youth program coming back from a field trip. The school bus that we saw that seemed to be intact but was resting hard up against what's left of the guardrail on the bridge. That had youth, let's call them what the note says, people from a youth program on the bus coming back from a field trip. This is, you see the school bus, the yellow school bus behind the truck where the firefighters are spraying water on what had been burning.
We have Chris O'Connell on the line as well. Chris?
Cindy, to say this is a catastrophic scene would not be an understatement. An unbelievable scene I'm looking at. I am right now under 35W. You see the entire bridge collapse. You've been seeing the pictures, but underneath it, just like it was buckled like a piece of paper, it just went into the river. It is a chaotic scene right now. A lot of people trying to come down thinking their loved ones may be here. We're seeing emergency workers from nearby hospitals running up in their scrubs. People just literally tears coming from their eyes just because of what they're witnessing right here. We're right now looking at an 18-wheeler you probably saw from the air on fire, literally under the bridge. It was just pinned up and just fell, and another piece of roadway just collapsed on top of it. But just a chaotic, cataclysmic scene that we're looking at right now. Of course, we're going to be researching this and looking at exactly the damage of all those cars in the water. Rescue crews are still scurrying, still coming to the scene right now, trying to figure out the best way to get to these people. But right now, I'm just looking at about 300 people looking here behind police barricades, everyone just silent, wondering how something like this could have happened. We're going to get some more. We'll get you some video of the scene just a little bit.
Yeah, these are the kind of scenes that basically kind of make your stomach churn when you look at that with the kind of anxiety, and I can only imagine what it's like on the scene.
All right, let's go to 5 Eyewitness News, Rod Simons. Rod is on the phone with us right now. We mentioned the Twins game was starting a little after 7 o'clock. We don't know if there was Twins traffic on this bridge or not. Rod, what can you tell us?
John, there was Twins traffic. I was actually at Target Center preparing to cover a news conference for the Timberwolves. Pandemonium broke out downtown. We rushed through a back street down here, and walking away from the bridge towards me as I get about a quarter mile from the bridge is Gary Babineau. Gary, tell us, you were on the bridge.
I was on the bridge going northbound. We were bumper-to-bumper traffic, probably going 10 miles an hour. The bridge started shaking, and the whole bridge from one end of the bridge to the other just completely collapsed. Went all the way down. Half the bridge is in the lake, in the Mississippi River. Half of it is on the ground, and I fell probably about 30, 40 feet, landed on the shore of the Mississippi. And let me paint the picture for you, John and Cindy. Gary is standing here with no shirt on, a nose that has been cut and it was bleeding, but it's dried. He is shaking.
You're lucky to be alive.
I am so lucky to be alive. On the way down, I thought I was dead. I literally thought I was dead. My truck was completely face down, was pointing towards the ground, falling towards the ground, and my truck got ripped in half. When I got over my truck, it was folded in half, and I can't believe I'm alive. I'm
and you've got a reason.
The reason was because I was wearing my seatbelt. I had my seatbelt on, and if I didn't, I don't know what would have happened.
Gary, can you hear me?
Lucky I only have a cut on my face from the steering wheel.
Now, Gary, you said that when you fell, you saw other cars, you saw other people in the water.
Yeah, I saw a tanker go head first into the water, and there was only about 5 feet of the back end showing out of the water.
Right now?
No, that's actually up farther on the bridge. I was down towards the water more. And the car that's on fire, they're lucky. They fell about 10 feet. And that might be the school bus that was actually, we ran up the inclined fallen bridge, and there was a school bus full of probably 8 to 14-year-olds, and we literally had to carry them off of the bridge.
And you had time to see this because you said you were only going less than 10 miles an hour.
So it was bumper-to-bumper traffic. We're probably going 10 miles an hour. There was a lot of cars on that bridge. And I was on the side looking forward. I was on the shore looking forward to the rest of the bridge, and I saw all the rest of the cars fall as I was falling, and then the dust it was just unbelievable. It started shaking in complete free fall, and I'm lucky to be alive.
Gary, give some attention. John, Cindy.
Yeah, it just sounds like we have one morsel of good news out of this, which is that the students that were in that truck were taken out. Rod, can you again verify that with your witness?
Gary, did you see the kids being taken out of that truck?
You helped take them out.
Out of the bus?
Yeah. Me and a couple other guys were literally carrying them off the bridge. There were some people handing the kids to us, and then we were catching the kids, and they're yelling, screaming, little kids, early teenagers, probably from ages 9 to 14.
That's what we understand, that the school bus was carrying a youth program that was coming back from a field trip.
A lot of them were bleeding. Cindy, he's going to get medical attention now.
Yeah, he should.
Thank you, Rod.
Now, Rod, are you still
with
us?
Gary.
Less than probably a quarter mile from the bridge, and it looks exactly like those scenes that we saw, the Bay Bridge collapse. There is smoke and some burning, something is burning over there, and people are still running from underneath. Screaming, and it's just pandemonium.
All right, Rod, thanks very much. And that is really our first eyewitness account of someone in a vehicle who actually was in the collapse. Again, Gary, the witness, the person talking to Rod, says he helped bring kids out of that school bus that we see there on the right side of your screen. 8 to 14-year-olds, according to Gary, a number of them. We know they were coming back from a field trip, a youth program. You can see the emergency door flung open in the back. The man Rod was talking to, Gary, says they were literally tossing and catching kids to get them off the bridge. We're going to try to work on getting more information about exactly where those kids are and what kind of condition they are in. One last thing. The hospitals in the Twin Cities all have emergency plans. They all have triage plans. Right now, I would guess, no confirmation, but I would guess those plans are in full swing because you have to imagine they're expecting multiple casualties from this disaster.
We've had reports from the scene, from our reporters on the scene, that say that there is probably a minimum of 30, as many as 50 cars in the water. Also, Gary, our eyewitness that Rod Simons just interviewed, confirmed what we saw, what appeared to be the case, that the bridge had collapsed on both ends, basically just fell in the middle, and of course causing multiple ruptures along the way. Now, is Leah McLean still in the newsroom? Because Leah's been tracking the history of this bridge, built in 67, some of the safety records. Leah, again, please bring us up to date.
Cindy, again, we're digging into just some of the history of this bridge, more from MnDOT as well. There was some work going on this bridge. They claim it's for bridge repair and pavement rehabilitation. Now, specifically what that means about what they were doing to the bridge, we're still looking into the details of what kind of work was going on. And again, a few other facts about this bridge. It is, this is Highway 35W. It crosses over the Mississippi River. It's 64 feet above the water. We just heard from a man who said that he fell into the river. We're seeing that it is 64 feet above the river. Again, it was built in 1967. And the claim to fame was that it has a single, almost 500-foot-long steel arch to avoid putting any piers into the water below. So this bridge just goes right over the river, nothing touching on the bottom. And again, we're seeing traffic flow, a daily traffic flow. Nearly 200,000 cars pass over this bridge every day. We're not getting any specifics yet on how many cars were on the bridge at the time that it collapsed, but as everybody knows who travels through the metro, this is a heavily used stretch of roadway in the metro. And again, this bridge about 64 feet above the water, and we see all those cars that have landed in the water now. John and Cindy, we're going to continue to dig for more information. We're trying to get a hold of a structural engineer to talk to that person about how something like this.
Again, we have a request from a number of cell phone companies in the Twin Cities right now, asking people to not make unnecessary cell phone calls right now. Only make cell phone calls that are absolutely necessary. This is how bad the situation is, folks. The cell phone companies want to keep the lines open. The system is being overloaded with calls. One would assume emergency calls, perhaps people at the scene calling to say they're okay. Right now, cell phone companies in the Twin Cities are asking that you not make any unnecessary cell phone calls.
And as we go on into the evening, the scene gets eerier and eerier. It appears that the fires have been extinguished, at least in part, and the sun is setting and is getting gray out there. Let's go to Chopper Ken to get a few more pieces of information.